Thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting Current Geek. Receive 30% off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CurrentGeek30. Remember, HelloFresh.com and the offer code CurrentGeek30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt.
The best way to kick off your weekend, unless it's already Saturday, in which it's the best way for you to be listening on your weekend. Unless it's Monday, it's the best way to remember your weekend. Welcome to Current Geek.
That's right. I got something to say to you that's a very specific to you thing. You ready for this?
Yeah.
We now live in a post-season two Expanse universe. All right.
Universe.
I came to a conclusion the other night, and it's not quite the same effect in the books. It works okay there, but I've decided something on the TV show. If you're new to that series and you don't know what's going on, and you hear somebody utter a very serious moment in the camera when they say the word Fred Johnson, it doesn't quite have the impact you think it does. You know what I'm saying? The guy's name couldn't be more common. So when somebody says, I gave it to Fred Johnson, it just doesn't have quite the bite.
It probably strikes you a little harder than others, too, sharing that last name, right?
It does. I mean, it strikes me a lot more, but if you're new to that series and we've been pushing it so much.
Fred Johnson is the relative I made up.
Right. It's the guy that's not invited to Thanksgiving next year. Hey, it's not just me and Tom today. We have guests. Let's start with artist, writer, and podcaster, Phil Rude. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Scott. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. He's a longstanding associate of the community, which we have always enjoyed. And for the record, your last name has two O's, not a U and a D and an E in it.
That is exactly right. It's rude like food. Ah. So that's the best way to explain it to people so they don't misspell or mispronounce it.
You should get a T-shirt that says rude like food.
Rude like food. Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty good.
Isn't it like an Anglo-Saxon or Norman word for like a meeting hall or something, a rude?
Meeting hall or some kind of farmhouse. It is something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I knew it was
okay.
All around European mutt, so I'm not really sure the etymology of the name. It all gets muddled in the family history.
But you could say we're all going to have a meeting at the Rude. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Down at the Rude House.
Yeah, and then 900 people show up to my house. So it's all good.
Down at the Rude. I like it. All right. Also with us, a guy you're familiar with, even if you're not. He's actually been on the show before, but also behind the scenes does a whole lot for it. It's a dude we found in the corner. It's Hammond Chamberlain. Hammond, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Hey, Tom. Phil, nice to see you.
Hi. It's good to see you,
dude. See you again.
Hey, so Hammond does our booking. He finds rad guests. Every time we have somebody like from some Hollywood studio or some editor of reality shows or some artist or creative dude from L.A., guess who's doing that? That's Hammond Chamberlain.
Yeah, not the guy who lives in L.A.
It's Hammond, and he's a fellow Salt Laker like myself, so we see each other now and again. Anyway, Hammond, it's great to have you on, man.
After we had our bridal photo a couple weeks ago, I'm so happy to see you again.
Yeah, it is. It's always good. Well, don't worry. The honeymoon is still to come.
Aww.
But that's not all we have. We have all kinds of fun stuff, starting with these headlines. Oh, that's wrong. Here with these headlines.
How do you Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
It's a long story, but I'll explain it off air.
Man, as somebody who's like screwed up the Daily Tech News Show feed in 17 different ways this week, I'm certainly not going to judge. Kevin Feige confirmed to The Hollywood Reporter that Spider-Man will appear in Avengers 4 in 2019. Avengers 4 doesn't have a name yet, but it'll be the fourth Avengers movie. It's going to have Spider-Man, followed by a sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming, which isn't even out yet. Spider-Man Homecoming sequel will also be in 2019. So we'll get two Spider-Man appearances in 2019. Sony is also moving ahead with spinoffs for Venom and a Silver Sable Black Cat team-up movie. Marvel not involved in those. And in this same Hollywood Reporter article, James Gunn is mentioned as somebody they would like to be involved with the Marvel Universe forever. And he's at least going to be back for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, as he posted on Facebook this week that after much consideration, he feels like he still has enough to give. So there'll be a third Guardians movie that James Gunn will write and direct.
So I have some thoughts about the earlier films mentioned, but real quick on Guardians, because or by virtue of your wife's awesome job with Fandango and Rotten Tomatoes, is there a chance that you'll get an early screening of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
I mean, there's a chance, but it's coming out next week. So I think the chance is rapidly diminished to zero.
That's true. I did get
a screener. We did get a screener that she had to watch for work of an advanced copy of a movie that had not hit theaters yet.
And you can't say what it is, can you?
Very excited. No, I can tell you what it is. How to Be a Latin Lover.
Whoa. That is, did it come in a brown bag or what's that about?
It's a comedy. You haven't seen the trailers for this?
I haven't seen it, no.
It's got, who has it in the movie draft?
It's got Kristen Bell. It didn't even make it to the movie draft. Yeah.
Didn't quite get in, it sounds like. All right, so we got Spider-Man making return appearances in various ways, both a sequel and, of course, a follow-up in Avengers 4. I think that makes sense. That crossover potential is too good for them to ignore, and they'll probably do that as long as they can do it. The things I want to go well that don't seem to have any Feige influence would be Venom and the Silver Sable Black Cat team up, which could be great. There's some really great comic material that stuff's based on. I didn't know Sony had those characters. That must have been part of their deal.
It's part of the Spider-Man deal, I would assume.
Yeah, because they're often in Spider-Man comics, but I always wondered maybe those were, you know, just some of the untapped B-level characters that Marvel had yet to do anything with.
But. Well, it sounds like Sony's got a lock on them, and whereas Spider-Man, they had specific conversations. They have not had conversations about Venom or any of the other characters, so Marvel not involved in the development of those.
And advance word on next week's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is really positive, so the idea that James Gunn would return seems like real good news for everybody. So I'm curious, Phil, your take on any of these topics.
Guardians 3, I'm excited about if Guardians 2 goes well. I kind of feel like they caught lightning in a bottle with Guardians 1. They kind of knew it wasn't a known property, and they gave themselves a freedom to kind of be as silly as they wanted to. And I'm a little afraid Guardians 2 is going to be a little, silly work. So we're going full Sharknado camp with this or something like that. I like that the same director's back, that Gunn is back for this. So that and all the original people, including like Michael Rooker and all the supporting people. So like that bodes well for it. So I think if Guardians 2 goes well, I'll be really excited for Guardians 3.
Yeah. Everything I've heard in the lead up is real positive. Hammond, any concerns or thoughts about this or those other movies that have yet to be made?
It's just weird to be thinking about movies that will be made when I retire.
You know, I'm having this problem too. I just want to make it that, you bring up a good.
Are you retiring in 2019? Or
No. I'm just. They're planning these so far now that they're talking about things that happen after my kids are in college.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I want to mention something real quick. I've been having this little crisis lately, where things get announced, be they video games or movies, usually, or a television show or something. And it used to be I'd go, oh, I gotta wait till 2015. That's forever away. Oh well, and I'll wait. Now I go, that's 2020. Will I even be alive then? That seems so far. I know I will be, but it seems so freaking far away now. This is a whole separate issue. You should talk to a therapist about it, but it feels like time is compressing and we're aligning ourselves with the speed of light. And before you know it, a day is a second and a second is a nanosecond or something to that effect.
Yeah.
But anyway,
we're already more than 25% through 2017.
I don't like to think about that. We're 2 months from Nerdtacular. I'm not even ready. I'm not ready for this. It's just too fast. Everything's slow down. Everyone just slow down and calm down and quit making movies in years that don't seem possible. But then they'll be fine when I get there. I'll play them when I get there and it'll all be fine.
It'll be here before you know it. My wife and I were just talking earlier tonight about how fast time flies. Mm. You look at a movie that you're looking forward to coming out in 2 years, it seems like forever. Mm. My son graduates high school in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And we didn't think that day would ever get there. You know what I mean? Mm. So that kind of stuff flies by and it'll be here before you know it. And I think the good thing about these movies, comic book movies, Star Wars movies, we get so much of it to fill the time in between that they can announce something 3 years off and you got 3 years of movies coming at you in between now and then.
Sure.
So
Sure.
It's not like you're starved for content at all.
Yeah, definitely not.
There is a chance here for, specifically with Venom, for Sony to take that back and make it something cool. Not that it was horrible in Spider-Man 3, but Spider-Man 3 generally was kind of...
Yeah, it was.
It was pretty bad.
I think all of Spider-Man 3 was horrible.
It was bad, but the Venom bits had possibilities. And it's always had possibilities. And maybe it's just my high hopes for quality Venom and maybe eventually... Oh, who's the other one? Not Venom. The red
Carnage.
One. Carnage. Like a good Carnage treatment would be amazing. And I don't know about you guys, but New Hope... not being all Star Wars here, but New Hope was inserted to me... or into me when Logan did what it did. And I know that's Fox and not Sony, but it's one of these third parties, right, that aren't Marvel directly that have stewardship over the property who maybe they'll just take more chances. And I don't mean a rated R Venom, although that's been rumored as well. But, you know, let's just take it in places that you don't have to be too safe with and let's see Venom the way he was meant to be. Very excited.
More Venom.
More Venom, please.
More Venom in your Venom. Speaking of A New Hope, Star Wars Celebration was last weekend. We could have filled up the entire show with Star Wars talk, to be honest. There was so much going on. We'll limit it to a couple of items here. You can go to letstalkaboutstarwars.com if you want to just get nonstop Star Wars. We got the first teaser for Star Wars The Last Jedi. Loads of other info. Kathleen Kennedy confirming that Leia will not appear in episode 9. There had been some information that they would use existing footage to put her in episode 9. Kathleen Kennedy put the kibosh on that. She said, nope, not going to happen. And director Rian Johnson described going to Carrie Fisher's house to go through the script and get ideas from her for episode 8. There's also a big touching memorial to Carrie by Mark Hamill during Celebration. So Star Wars Celebration with a tinge of sadness.
Yeah, but all really nice stuff, I thought. They were some of the best bits of the event. Hammond, anything at the celebration that jumped out at you, made you go, ooh, I can't wait for this?
I thought the teaser was good. I mean, I didn't really pay much attention to it. I was knee deep in other things this week, but the teaser did what it was supposed to do. It made me want to see the film.
Did you feel like I came away with it liking it, but feeling a little like they didn't show me anything.
And I'm okay with that because I don't need my teasers to tell me do what the trailer does.
Well, it isn't, but when does a teaser not become a trailer? Because 2 minutes is kind of a trailer, right?
Yeah, I guess. It's all semantics and nuance to me. At this point, I just want to see it. It's fine.
All right.
I call it a good teaser because it didn't show us any plot elements. Like, you can glean very little about the story from this. A trailer will show you a little bit more, I feel like.
Yeah, but okay, so it is all semantics, and it's all depends on who you are. But I would say this about the teaser for episode 7 when it first hit. It at least had visual elements that made me want to dissect that thing and figure out what the heck am I looking at. Because it sparks my imagination to see a derelict Star Destroyer in the middle of the dirt or some other weird thing, a rolling droid that we only see for a split second. Those kinds of things make me go, ooh, what? This is new. This is totally new. This isn't just Star Wars. This is something new. This didn't have any of that. This is just stuff we either already knew from 7 visually and no other real pieces of anything that was like, whoa, what is that opening up? Or, ooh, what is that little thing over there? Ah, what's that character's face? And I was hoping for some of that.
I think this goes more to the fact that you guys have talked about this before where we're getting complacent with our Star Wars. We have it every year now. Mm-hmm. So that the bright, shiny feeling we get when we see a trailer or something given to a Star Warsy, we're now kind of like, oh, yep, that's just Star Wars.
So this is year 3 of the rest of our lives. Right?
So. I'm just happy to see that Luke actually has a line in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Some spoken
dialogue. I'm of the camp that all a Star Wars trailer has to do is tell me what date it comes out on. I'm going to see that thing. Good trailer, bad trailer, no matter what it is. So I'm kind of, I saw the teaser and I don't know that I'll take in any other trailers as they come out and try and go in kind of as fresh as I can. I know I'm going to see it and it's kind of all I need. So I don't know. I'm kind of simple like that. I appreciate that there's podcasts and YouTube channels that are trying to connect the threads and make conspiracy theories out of the bits of trailer they get. And that's cool. And I like seeing all the fan theories spin out of that. But for me, I know I'm going one way or the other. So it kind of helps me control the hype.
Yeah, because you're going no matter what. It's like a not like a job.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yeah, you're assigned. You have an assignment. You're going to fulfill your assignment regardless of what.
That's kind of it. Yeah, yeah. It's a given. We're there Christmas Day for the last 2 years. I'm sure we'll be there Christmas Day this year too. So it's now we've made it kind of a tradition here.
Sure.
The other piece of Star Wars news we got here is Disney sending out a survey. It's actually a third party contractor on behalf of Disney sending out a survey asking folks what they would think about a resort hotel experience at Disney World that would take place aboard a starship. So your hotel would be a starship. Your room would either have a galaxy view or a pool view. It would be a 2-day story. You're basically LARPing this entire 2-day stay in the hotel in the Star Wars universe, a continuous story-driven entertainment. Guests would engage in the story with programs like flight training, ship exploration, lightsaber training, personalized secret missions. You can either participate or observe, and it would carry out throughout the entire stay.
Okay. You know, I'd be interested in at least once. I was just in Vegas last week, and I know Hammond the week before that was there, and I was reminded, because we stayed downtown near Fremont, was reminded that there was almost, I mean, like, hair away from happening, a giant replica of the Enterprise, Kirk era Enterprise downtown, like a full blown built up casino hotel, but also multiple decks with multiple Star Trek experiences type thing. And there's concept art out there and stuff you can look at online. It's really awesome. And I'm always a little sad when I'm reminded of that and know that it never happened. This sounds like the Star Wars equivalent of it. And the answer is yeah, of course. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to go do the 2-3 day LARPing story every time, but I'd want to stay there. And I'd want, like, I don't know.
Well, and that they, you know, the way they phrased it is you can observe or participate. So if you stay there and you don't want to participate, you can still just kind of watch it happening around you. It just lends atmosphere, I guess.
What if I bring a foam sword and I yell lightning bolt, lightning bolt, lightning bolt as I run down the hall?
You'll be expected.
Well,
be transferred to a different LARPing hotel.
Okay, that's what I thought.
What I would want to do is sit at Admiral Akbar's table and order calamari.
I don't know if they, I mean, if they had that, that'd be amazing, but it would be a trap, so be careful.
And then I will try to eat some, and you'll say, no, it's not your calamari, it's mine calamari.
Yeah, and they'll bring out a plate so big, you'll say, I can't eat a plate of this magnitude, and then you'll eat it. It'll be fine. Phil, you want to go stay at the Star Wars hotel and enjoy its many proclivities?
I would want to see it. I don't know if I would want to stay there for $1,000 a night.
but you can stay in the Ewok room.
Yeah. I get to stay in the treehouse. Breakdancing Vader kind of ruined the theme park Star Wars experience. But I've also been to the Harry Potter world at Universal.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a giant Harry Potter fan. And it is amazing the way they're able to take a theme park and really the immersion that they give you, the experience of that world. And I think if they kind of take some notes from Universal and what they did, they could make this really cool, really amazing.
Yeah. I mean, part of my, you know, Disney buying Star Wars thing way back in the early days of it, when we first heard about it, was, ooh, I really, really hope so many cool things happen at theme parks. And now we're getting
there. Well, and there's going to be a kind of continuous storyline in the theme park part of Star Wars, that Disney is adding to the Hollywood section. But that this just is like, if that's not enough for you to just spend the day kind of observing a story around you, you can go dive in and live it if you want.
Sure.
All right.
So what they need to do is decorate one of the Disney cruise ships to be a Star Destroyer. Then you go out on your ship,
right,
quote unquote, and then to the island that's been set up to be.
They already do the stories on the cruises. Mm-hmm. Why not just make the whole ship a freaking Star Destroyer?
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. I would go on a lot more cruises.
Or two cruise ships, a Rebel cruiser and a Star Destroyer, and then they face off at sea.
We'll just chase each other the whole time. That'd be fine.
We're pulling into port. It's a trap.
Oh, no, it's a trap.
The calamari.
We can't take an island on of that magnitude. Exactly. Anyway.
Meanwhile, that's real. Here's fantasy. New York firm Clouds Architecture Office has proposed a skyscraper that would hang from cables attached to an asteroid put into orbit. Those of you who listen to We Have Concerns may have already heard about this. The Analemma Tower would be the world's tallest building. Construction would take place in Dubai, and then the asteroid would float to New York City, where it would begin a figure eight pattern. It would be in a almost geosynchronous orbit. So it would move between New York and South America in a 24-hour pattern. So it would always be over the same part of the Earth at the same time of day, every day. And it's the slowest part of its movement would happen when it's over New York. The lower two-thirds would be offices. The upper floors would be residential. And the tower theoretically could exist, like the physics would work, but the actual technology to construct it has yet to be developed.
So we would put the asteroid into orbit?
It's that part we know how to do. We haven't done it yet, but we actually, NASA has plans for that. Like if we needed to put an asteroid in orbit of Earth, we could move an asteroid. That's the blowing my mind part. It's like, oh, moving an asteroid? Sure. We've figured out how to do that. Moving a tall building up to an asteroid and hanging it by cables is the tough part.
Yeah. I mean, so I love this idea in theory, but yes, Hammond, your question, please.
Don't orbits degrade over time?
Geosynchronous orbits would not. I mean, yes, the moon is degrading as an orbit in millions of years. Its orbit will degrade. But you can
satellites degrade too.
So that its orbit will last, so that this will not be a problem until we've developed thrusters that can adjust the orbit.
All right.
Yeah, so it's a time thing. If in theory you create an actual geosynchronous orbit, that thing would last well past multiple generations.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how I don't know, I didn't read the article and I feel bad I didn't, but how much space is between, let's say I'm standing in New York or I'm on a building in New York. Let's say I'm up on some tall building. How can I see the thing coming, and will there be a dude on it? Like, how far are we talking? Can I throw a rock and hit it? Like, probably far higher up than that, right?
I mean, it has to be high enough that the tallest buildings won't hit it. So yeah, I imagine it, but you'll be able to see it, because the other thing they haven't been able to figure out exactly is how you'll get to it. They actually designed a system of hooks that would allow you to, whatever's flying up to it, to like be grabbed on. But they don't know exactly the best way to get folks up there.
Yeah, there's also kind of a practical, like, why are we doing this kind of question? But for whatever reason, it compels the crap out of me.
It's insanely impractical, and I think that's what makes it so cool, Scott.
Yeah.
I just, like, the fact that it's just such a weird idea.
Yeah.
And that you'll have kids that live in this building going, hey, let's go down to the basement and spit out the window onto cars. You know, like it's just such a bizarre idea. Like, who even comes up with it?
Yeah, I love it. It sounds like,
but I think that's what makes it cool. It's just that, like, there's no way in and out of the building. There's no reason for it. Let's do it.
It would be the
practical reasons for it would be not taking up arable land.
Yeah,
like you can build a much taller building up there than you can on the ground, and it's actually safer because you're not going to get hit by a hurricane, you're not going to get taken out by an earthquake. Like if you can get it there, it actually solves a lot of problems.
Yeah.
So is the future mobile buildings?
I don't know,
like where structures won't be anchored to the ground anymore.
That's, I don't know, right. But you literally could. Okay.
You ground livers.
Responsible. I use this. Well, as you know, another thing I've learned in The Expanse is life is no longer about color or creed or religion. It's about which gravitational pull were you born under, which is a really fascinating idea in science fiction. And this would obviously have new things attached to it. But what if you could get on the building? Or no. Sorry. Hold me. Think about this for a second. Let's say you live in New York.
Yeah.
But you work all day in South America.
Oh, no. Actually, this is part of the plan. The part of the plan is you live in New York, you work in the building.
Oh.
Remember, two-thirds of this is office space.
Yeah. And then
during the day, you go down to South America and back during your office day. Maybe you get off in Brazil for lunch. And then then you're back in New York. Okay. At the end of the day.
All right. I'm in.
Think about the base jumping that could happen from this.
Sure. I mean, it's not that, you know, it sounds fantastical, but so did like elevators of space. And that's you know, a tangible thing that they're theorizing that you could actually pull off. It was really good in those Scalzi books, that the way he dealt with Old Man's War, the way he dealt with like getting up to these upper areas, you'd take actual elevators. That's really cool. This feels like an extension of that. It's very science fiction. But I love it. So let's make some stories about it, and then maybe we'll build it. That's usually how this goes.
Now let's move to a practical story. Practical in the sense that it can be done, not practical in the sense that it's going to be worth doing unless you just want to do it. Engineer Scotty Allen bought parts for a cell phone at markets in China. He lives in China, works in China. He knows about these big marketplaces that are just scrap yards for pieces of cell phones. So he's like, hey, I noticed a bunch of parts of an iPhone. I'm going to build myself an iPhone. Posted an explanation in video at strangeparts.com, his website. He even tried to solder his own logic board, spent more than $1,000, much of it on parts and tools that he ended up not needing because he was just figuring this out as he went along. And he estimates in his final working iPhone that he's got about $300 worth of parts in there. Ended up with an iPhone 6S, 16 gigabyte.
Yeah, it's kind of awesome that he was able to pull it off. Obviously, it's much easier if you live in southern China and that's where all those parts are being made. But I remember hearing the story this week and thinking, well, that's a guy with an idea with time on his hands. That's a thing to do.
So my favorite part of the video is when he's getting the screen done and they put it in the bubble removing machine. That's what they call it. And they close the door, and on the door it says bubble moving removing machine.
Oh, wow. That really? That's awesome.
Yeah. Don't want bubbles in your screen.
No. Nobody want that.
I'm glad they labeled that machine accurately.
Yeah. Kidding.
It's like the old Adam West Batman, how everything is labeled very specifically. Yeah.
I just, obviously he did it because he wanted to see if he could. And I always like it when people do that. But it reminds me also last year before, somebody had to make a sandwich or wanted to make a sandwich from absolute scratch to finished sandwich. And that meant
like growing the wheat and everything.
Yeah, wheat, grinding the wheat, preparing the flour, doing that whole thing, raising the pig, killing the pig, getting the ham from the pig, lettuce, had to grow it, like all of these ingredients. And it just is a nice reminder that when somebody has got a system set up where automation is at play, it's a big human thing that we do and we're really good at it, that you find that you realize, man, I wouldn't be eating a lot of sandwiches if I had to do this, all on my own. I mean, Even back in the day, if you made your own sandwich, you might have a farm, you'd have the ingredients, you're collecting them and refrigerating things and keeping stuff in ice boxes and harvesting a certain time of year. So we've always had a form of it, but we are in such a convenient society right now where I can just go get a hot dog. Making a hot dog from scratch is a ridiculous proposition.
You need bugs and animal parts and...
Yeah. Well, will I even know how to get it into a little tube? A little wiener tube.
Skeletons.
I think it's hard all around. So anyway, that kind of stuff always fascinates me.
This for you control freaks, think about this. When you're like, I'll just do it myself. No, you never will. Because you're always using something that somebody else made.
Yep.
Someone else made. Yeah. Something came before you to allow you to make it.
I just drove at least 12 people crazy with that.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And it's a little scary if we ever, if all of our minds suddenly forgot about how we put stuff together, we'd be screwed. Yeah. We'd go through all the stuff we have left and then we'd be done.
Part of the reason that humanity works is because we all don't have to do everything ourselves.
Yeah.
That's true. You can pick up a hammer that somebody else smelted and assembled. And cut the wood and grew the wood for so that you can make the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like maybe you, but I make all my own hammers myself, Tom.
Well, okay, except for Phil, obviously.
Yeah, there was a book I read, Rational Optimist.
Hammer Maker Rude, they call it.
The Rational Optimist book was interesting in one regard. I actually think it's an interesting book generally, but there's this thing where it talks about a rock that's shaped to be a good hammer or chisel type rudimentary tool. And it's about the same size and weight as a modern computer mouse. And how one of them can take one person to do it, and this other thing took potentially thousands of people to eventually come to what it is today. And that involves all the plastics, the innovations in the areas that needed to be innovated in, the silicone, the wiring, the electrical harnessing, all this stuff, just to make a computer mouse, and how we are the only species on this planet who has, at least to this degree, figured out how to go from I make a thing to do a thing for me to we're all contributing to things that help everyone make more things that help everyone make more things.
And yeah. And that computer mouse is crap at hammering nails.
It's garbage for that. It'll break the first hit. It's the worst. Yeah. And also that rock, terrible at navigating the web.
So, I know.
Yeah.
I just keep breaking monitors.
It's a huge bummer. I'll tell you what's not a bummer though. It's our stories that we get on the show. Large part of them are come from people who vote for them and give them to us. Tom, how do they do it? Who are they?
Yeah, you go to currentgeek.reddit.com. Anybody can do it. You just vote. You just vote on the things you like. I want to hear him talk about that. Vote done. You've affected the show. You are a producer of the show at that point. And big thanks to the folks who submit the stories. We love seeing all of them. We used stories from Gatekeeper, Tattooed, Another Jay Martin, and The Max today. So special thanks to them.
Very nice. It's part of the show where we let our guests talk a little bit about what they're up to, projects they're working on, things they're doing. Let's start with Phil. Phil, what are you up to these days? I know you're a writer. You do some podcasting. What are the projects you'd like people to know about?
Yeah, I'm mainly a cartoonist, but my partner in crime, Carrie Sims, former guest here, pulled me into podcasting about a year ago. And we started developing a show called Sketching Comedy, where it was about conversation and drawing, live drawing. And in the time we were developing that show, Westworld started up on HBO, and we were big fans, so we started a fan cast called Brokebot Mountain, which is still going, even though the show is over. We're exploring the themes in other science fiction, doing some Western movies, just whatever kind of ties into artificial intelligence and existence. So we're carrying on with both of those shows. We got Sketching Comedy up and running. That's what I'm doing a lot of my artwork for right now. All the stuff over there at Blazing Carib. So.
Definitely worth checking out, by the way. I didn't know that was the name of your show. I think that's freaking brilliant. But I'm sure.
Sean Burns came up with that when we were pitching names around, and it stuck, and we love it. We get good feedback on the name all the time, and we get good feedback from the show as we go along. We're getting better and better, I think.
Yeah, and I would also recommend people check out the where I'm looking right now, philrood.blogspot.com, and just check out his portfolio. Amazing ink work and artwork and color work. Really good stuff over here. So
thank you. I want to throw to you, I found Frog Pants through Diary of a Cartoonist when it was a video podcast.
No way. Wow, that was a while ago.
And I learned how to color in Photoshop watching videos of you color in Photoshop.
Really? So, wow.
I thank you, Mr. Scott Johnson.
I hope I sent you on a decent path. It looks like you
set me off on the right foot. So that's my history of finding Frog Pants was through that show. So that's very cool.
Well, that's awesome. And I'm really glad to hear that. And it looks like you are killing it. So I must have sent you in the right direction, I hope. Very cool, dude. Well, we'll give some people some links at the end of the show again, make sure they know where to go. Hammond, how about you, man? Besides doing cool stuff for this show, what are you up to?
I do Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C. I interviewed the lead singer of the Spin Doctors this week.
Oh, very cool.
And Phil did my cover art for my show.
Nice.
Fantastic. So this takes a village. Yeah. See? It's like the hammer.
Yep. Right. And then I do soundography with Brian Ibbett, and that is a ton of fun to do. And this week we've been listening to a lot of Level 42.
There's something about you, baby. All right. Well, hold on. Who the singer for the Spin Doctors? I'm trying to. Are they the ones that go, and if you try to call me baby, that's them. Okay.
Yeah, Chris Barron.
All right, there he is. Good looking guy. Check him out.
Did he tell you who the two princes were?
No, we actually talked about his new solo project a lot that he's doing, and that and his writing.
I'm sure he was much more interested in talking about that, the two princes.
Yeah. The 90s. Good stuff. All right, well, do check those out. Well, again, we'll talk more links from and about you here in a bit. But before all of that, a quick word from our friends at HelloFresh. You guys, I love HelloFresh.com. Both Tom and I got our HelloFreshes. We love them. What is HelloFresh, you ask? It's the meal delivery kit service that makes cooking more fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Take it from me, a guy who doesn't cook very often. There's so much truth in what I just said, including the part where I don't cook very often. But HelloFresh makes me look like some sort of weird pro. I don't understand it exactly. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. You get them, and in like 30 minutes or less, boom, nutritious, fresh home meals for everybody who's eating. They only source the freshest of ingredients, measured to the exact quantities that you need, so there's no food waste. I really like that about them. And right now, they're offering light spring meals, and have just introduced breakfast options. That is so awesome. I can't wait to try that. Less than $10 per meal. Here's what we want you to do. We've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they are offering everyone in our audience $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CurrentGeek30. That's CurrentGeek30 for $30 off. I really, really enjoyed the meals that I've gotten. All of them have been good. I can't name one I didn't like. In fact, there wasn't even like one I liked more than the other. They were all good. They were all hard choices which ones to do. The last set of three I got every night was like Disneyland for me. and they will be for you too. They're so good, so good, so good. Anyway, that's HelloFresh.com. Use the code CURRENTGEEK30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. And big, big thanks to HelloFresh. Why, look here, it's the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, this is how this works, folks. That gets turned down, and then we talk about how this works. This is how this is going to work. We're going to ask you a series of questions in areas of your expertise. When you answer a question correctly, you're going to hear this sound. You're going to hear, whoops, this one. And when you hear it wrong or get it wrong, you'll hear this sound. All the time, Tom will keep score, and he'll do a good job of that because he always does. See, Tom, I didn't say anything weird. See? Yeah, I got it all worked out. So let's... let's throw it out here. Phil, you're up first, and Hammond gave you this topic. Are you ready?
Oh, I can't wait to hear what Hammond hooked me up with.
All right, here we go. Your topic is... Hold on. Control-Alt. There we go. All right. Your topic is Westworld movie trivia.
Oh, movie trivia. All right. See
yeah.
Twice.
Not the... You, oh, well, that's good. That's more than I've. That's more than the one time I've seen it. So
You'll Brenner fine.
Oh, my gosh. Can we... Thanks, everybody. Podcasting's over. We're never doing this again.
That's the one that killed it.
We were waiting for the big one.
I really did kind of stop trying.
That's really good, though. You should never stop trying. All right, here's your first question. What year was the Westworld movie released to the public?
1973.
You are correct. Well done. Speed bonus, Tom? That was pretty quick. Maybe? No?
No.
Okay. I gotta quit assuming things. Next question.
Maybe you would have gotten it if you had begged for it.
But... I know, I seemed a little eager there.
Scott.
I was eager. Sorry, I'm going to no longer do this. Next question. Who plays John Blaine in the film?
Mr. Barbara Streisand. James Brolin.
Very well done. I was going to give it to you either way. Yep, James Brolin is correct. Very funny lately in that TV show he's in with, what's her name? I can't think of it, so I won't say it. Next question. Who directed the film version of Westworld?
Michael Crichton.
That is correct. He also wrote the book that it is. Well, no, he didn't write a book. This was all straight to movie, right? Yeah. I kind of wish there was a book. Second to last question. In what year is the movie itself set?
Oh... 2012.
You are incorrect. The correct answer is 1983. They were real positive about
they real thought it was going to move fast there, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. I hate it when movies. That's why I think Star Trek's the better solution out there, because they go so far in advance that we'll have destroyed ourselves by then, so who cares?
Yeah.
But these ones are like, the uprising happens in 1997.
Well, but then they did have Khan coming along in the 90s. So,
yeah, that's true. All right, final question. How many worlds are there in the park in the film?
That's a good one.
Yep.
You
don't have to name them, but if you know the number of them, that'll get you the point.
I'm trying. I'm going to say three.
Let's see. One, two, three. That is correct. Well done. It is Westworld, Roman World, and Medieval World.
That's the one.
Yep. The TV show appears to be playing about with Samurai World, which is pretty
exciting. Possibly Samurai World. Yeah, very cool.
Very excited about that, if they get to using it at all. All right. Well done. Jeez, you pretty much made mincemeat out of that list of questions. That means, Hammond, the pressure's on you. Are you? Hammond, are you ready for yours?
Sure.
Your topic is Blues Traveler trivia. Blues Traveler, the band, you know.
I didn't see that coming.
Did right. Hammond give himself this topic?
I don't remember. Did you?
Yes.
Oh, you did. So
this is a stack deck.
Yeah. It feels like it. Hopefully Mike had some fun with this. We'll find out. Here's your first question. What year did Blues Traveler form?
87.
That is correct. Well done. I remember that year. Next question. Excuse me. Paul Schaefer, who I just started an interview with. Paul Schaefer. Awesome to listen to, by the way.
World's most dangerous band.
That's right. Paul Schaefer appeared in what music video by Blues Traveler?
Is that Hook?
You would be correct. I was going to give you a hint and say, what is the second worst Spielberg movie ever made? And you could have said Hook.
AI?
Yeah, whatever. You guys can send your emails. That movie is poop. It's poop. Next question. How many studio albums have been released by Blues Traveler?
Studio albums.
Yeah, studio.
I'm going to say 9?
You are incorrect. The answer is 12.
Well, he actually gets a point. He said, I'm going to say 9, and then said 9.
Yeah. And don't, if you try that twice, he'll dock you, I've learned. So just a warning. Next question.
I like that truth counts.
Yeah, truth
does
count.
That's a great scoring policy.
Yeah. He's a stickler for it. Here's your next second to last question. What city did the band form in?
I would say New Jersey.
I picture it like Voltron. They just all
came
together.
A state.
Yeah, New Jersey's a state.
It's a state. Crap. Princeton?
Let me check and see if that's right. It is correct. Princeton, New Jersey. So it was Jersey, but Princeton was the city. Well done. Final question.
You almost lost points for calling a state a city.
Yeah.
I know. Well, no, exactly.
So you're good.
The great city of Alabama. Final question. Blues Traveler recorded a cover of Secret Agent Man. What movie soundtrack was this?
Ace Ventura 2.
Oh, my Lord. Let's just give you the point right there. It's Ace Ventura 2, When Nature Calls. Well done. Tom, I don't know who won because they both kind of creamed it. Who won?
Well, through the various scoring complexities, the speed bonuses, the truth bonuses, we ended up with a final score of Phil 5, Hammond 5.
Oh, my gosh. You guys are crazy. Well done, both of you. You've exceeded our expectations and made us happy, happy men. Not really. I'm just saying
there's
all
that. There's something about both of you.
Yeah, there is something about you, baby. All right.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but I'll take it.
You'll take it. It is the venerable segment we call Forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
So true. Today, Hammond put it together, but I'll tell folks at home what this is about. We predict the future in areas of science, pop culture, whatever. It doesn't matter. There are no laws or limits. You can go as far in the future as you want. And Hammond did today's. Do you want to tell us what you came up with, Hammond?
Yeah, so we've started looking at genetically removing defects and certain illnesses from genetically removing them in utero. And we've already been doing, you know, test tube and all those kind of breeding and child rearing things. And I feel like in the future, we're going to be able to pick from a menu to design our children with race, skin color, gender, eye color, just basically make designer children.
Give me a time frame. What do you think on timing? How soon will we have this?
75 years.
Oh, geez. That's further out than I was thinking you were going to say. Like, literally walk into the place. They say, well, hello, Mr. Chamberlain. Here's your list of choices. We're having a special today on Blue Eyes. And you choose from those lists and you just make your kid. Is that the deal?
So I don't know if you guys have this burger chain out where y'all are, but there's a place called The Counter around here in California, where you just go in and there's a sheet of paper and you just check off, like, I want cheddar cheese and I want lettuce and tomatoes. And so I'm imagining it's like that. You just go in with a piece of paper and you're like, blue eyes, entertaining, sense of humor, not better looking than me. Okay.
Well, all right. So every time somebody has a prediction like this, I like to throw this back at them because it's a real question of mine. And I mean this seriously. If we do have that ability and we start to be able to custom build our offspring in such a way, do we get a fully rendered image of what the kid's going to look like before we decide, or are these all just elements that we hope work together? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Can you sue if it doesn't match?
Yeah, because it seems like if you're going to be this picky and want to have your nature tailor-made, you're going to want to go the full way and say, well, I need to see concept art, or I need to see a computer rendering of this child's face.
Can you do like, you know, I want super strength and stuff like that, or is it just existing?
Yeah.
I don't think
from the stars. I want a kid who won't get speeding tickets and will take the garbage out without being told.
Oh, yeah. You're
you guys
smart.
Are like, will you be able to lift the car? You know, like,
totally smart. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to get those basics done. If they lift a car but are too lazy to take out the garbage, what good are they?
Won't stay up past curfew and worry me, takes the garbage.
Exactly.
No, these are smart. These are
Will he do his history homework? Yeah. Will he be able to pass Algebra 2 without my help? Yeah. That's what I want.
Somebody's
got
to
get better because I'm no good at math.
Somebody's
got
to.
That's exactly right.
Someone's got a kid who's 3 weeks out of graduation, and you can tell, Phil.
All I want is for him to be a doctor.
Yeah. But I mean, you know what I mean? And like if you said, well, all right, here's what the kid looks like at 5 months. Here's what he looks like at age 2. Here's what he looks like at 12. Like, I feel like you're going to want to demand that stuff. And then I don't know where it ends. Like, are you saying?
I think if we're going to have the technology to do this, then there might be some sort of predictive, like almost like weather radar that can print out and show you pictures of what the predicted looks will be at 5 months, 5 years, mm-hmm. 15 years and 25 years or something.
There's already going to be people who just take the pre-build too. They're just not going to want it. They're going to want certain traits. They're not going to customize every single thing. They just want to choose the race and class, and that's it.
There you go. It's like a character creator in like a Skyrim. Some people don't want to mess. They just want to go randomize, go, and get out of here. Or randomize and then change the hair color, make him a little shorter.
And then you can have the option of adding in, genetic features of the husband and father too. And if you don't, then you can, go outside that.
Can I get weird and say, I'd like 3 ears. One should be on the back of the head and things like that. Do you think we're going to get that crazy with it?
I'm surprised that we haven't seen some stranger things come
Hammond
up yet.
Just said you can have the traits of the father.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not supposed to tell people about my third ear that's back here. It's so I get good surround. I can get a lot of hearing. I can hear what's going on behind me. It's nice. It's a good, convenient, naturally occurring mutation. But no, I don't doubt that you're right about this. I actually think this sort of thing or something like it will be sooner than 75 years. The question is, when will we culturally accept such a thing?
Well, I say 75 years just because of all the legal wranglings and testing and weird mice and cats that'll come out while they're doing all this stuff and all the protesting. And
wait, are you saying I could have a cat mouse instead of a kid by accident? Is that what you're telling
me? No, I'm saying that all the testing that happens beforehand.
But I really like the idea that you said at age 15 he would look like this, but then at 15 he kind of folded into himself and became a cat mouse. That's pretty cool.
Well, I'm thinking with the fact that we're learning how genes can express themselves differently, how epigenetics plays a factor, how you can make the same gene express itself in different ways. Like we could have dials where you turn up that civic responsibility when they get in their teen years, and then you could turn it back down when they head to college. It's like Westworld. Like you just, hit a sliding scale.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot.
But will my kid be Bluetooth enabled so I can use the Nest on him?
Yeah.
Yes.
Bluetooth will never leave.
Like every so often the connection goes out and you're just like,
I got to repair it. What do I hold down to make a repair? You got to squeeze his nose till the light blinks. Like,
honey, what's the password? I got it. Yeah. It's
logged me out of our son again.
Yeah. I don't like how different devices all decide to have different ways of pairing your Bluetooth, and I cannot imagine what it would be with a kid. So let's hope that we don't get there. Would this still... Okay, Hammond, one final question. Does this child still gestate within the belly of the mother?
I think that would be the choice of the mom and the family. I think that there'd be those who choose to not have that, to do that for whatever reason, vanity, health, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then other people who would do it because they want to have that experience of being close and bonding or whatever. So I think that'd be a choice.
Like homebrew.
Yeah. You could do it in a vat then, you're saying. I mean, or in a, a condition.
Wow, that just makes it super impersonal.
I don't quite mean it that way. Monkeys. Yeah, exactly. It's just like sea monkeys. Well done. But no, if I feel like they're the closer we get to these things, I feel like the further we get away from some of the natural bonding human elements of having a child in relative natural childbirth, that stuff is...
But you can't tell me you don't know people who don't want to have children for vanity reasons.
Oh, of course. I know plenty that do. Yeah. I know some that adopt kids with the same checklist. They have adoption right now has this checklist system kind of. They say, well, I would like one from...
That's true. That's true. Sometimes they're out of stock. That's the only problem.
That's right. Or they're,
You get a rain check on a kid?
We'll let you know. Pre-order now and secure yours today.
You got to order before Black Friday, Tom. You can't go down there on the day that everyone's out.
Oh, my dear Lord. That was funny. All right. Well, there you go. Good stuff, dude. And we always enjoy this. If you'd like to send in your own at home, folks, and you'd like us to peruse it and talk about it and think about it, you can send those to currentgeek@gmail.com, which is also where our email came from this week. It was sent to us by Carrie in Cincinnati, or the name is Concerned Carrie in Cincinnati.
Concerned Carrie, yeah.
The CKC. Says this. It's very Star Wars related, so this is topical for today. Those Star Wars posters, meaning the new ones, I guess there's only one, make me think that Luke is the new bad guy. Please tell me Luke is not the new bad guy. Concerned Carrie in Cincinnati.
Luke is not the new bad guy, Carrie.
Hmm.
What if he is?
What if he is, though?
I don't know. That's not what Carrie asked. Carrie said, please tell me Luke is not the new bad guy. So I did.
All right. You get an extra point for honesty. But no, like, I don't know. He looks pretty serious in that.
Well, the poster's red.
Yeah.
That's I think that's what Carrie's.
And he looks slightly constipated.
Yeah. Only slightly, though.
That's probably just the actor.
That's just Mark Hamill these days. He's fine. But no, like, if I mean, clearly they're trying to say something with color there a little. I mean, I don't know what it is exactly, but it does, you know, we've got things like him saying, you know, we have to end the Jedi. I'm not saying that means he's going full Sith or anything. I just mean,
no, I, from what, and again, we talk about this a lot on Let's Talk About Star Wars, but, my guess is it's very unlikely that Luke becomes the bad guy, but they're trying to make it sound like he's out of the game. And there's this thing in the Legends Star Wars called the Gray Jedi that they've sort of brought up in Star Wars Rebels. And some people are thinking, oh, maybe he'll be that. Mm-hmm. The Gray Jedi are sort of neither good nor bad. It's all about balance. So,
like Gandalf?
Yeah, Gandalf the Gray. Gandalf.
And then Luke will fight the Balrog and come back as Luke the White.
Yeah.
So, Phil, here's a question I'd throw at you as someone who I know loves Star Wars and are going to go see this new movie no matter what. Are you worried at all that Luke is going to lose his happy-go-lucky Luke?
Other hand?
Luke stuff?
Oh.
No, not his other hand. That's pretty good, though. But no, like, you know, he's not going to be the optimistic dude he always was in the movies we know him from. Is he going to be a little darker here and too much, maybe? What do you think?
I kind of feel like he is probably slipping down into that, and that's probably where we caught up with him at the end of Episode 7, but I think part of the arc of these three movies is going to be his redemption out of that. You know, him almost like a crisis of faith that he comes out of. And that's just an idea based on one shot of him in the last movie. And the fact that it's kind of a pessimistic tone in the teaser trailer we just got. So, if I had to guess, I'd say he's in a slump and this is going to be up to Rey to bring him out, just sort of like it was up to him to bring Anakin back. So,
Tom, you guys are probably talking about this.
I think there's a formula and a cycle to Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree. But Tom, have you guys talked about this on the show, on your Let's Talk About Star Wars show, about this being the middle chapter, and do you think it's going to be a darker chapter? Is that the consensus? Yeah.
They've actually said as much in public. So, yes, this is going to be a darker. This is going to be the empire of the new trilogy, for sure.
And it is, you know, Rian Johnson, everybody, who brought us Looper, Brick, and Brothers Bloom. These are some, you know.
Those are happy-go-lucky, fun-filled
rock. Yeah, it was like a frolic through the field on a spring morning in those films. So I guess that's why they hired him. Anyway, big thanks, Carrie. Don't be so concerned. It's all going to work out. Concerned Carrie in Cincinnati. Soon you will be consoled, Carrie, in Cincinnati when that film comes out.
Hope that helps.
You won't have to change your initials. And that's going to do it for the show. Now, by the way, currentgeek@gmail.com. That's the email address. Use it liberally. We're happy to read these right here on the show. Before we go, let us give our guests a chance to say one more time where people can find their good works. Let's start with Hammond.
You can find me over at Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C, or at Jay Hammond C on Twitter, and on Soundography with Brian Ibbett.
Brian Ibbett, big bald guy. I know him
well.
And
booking here weekly.
Yeah, every week you're witnessing the good work of you. So well done. Phil, where can people find you?
I am philrood.com. You can get me at philrood on Twitter. You can get a hold of me through blazingcariboustudios.com. And in the next couple months, I will be on the Artist Roundtable on Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C.
Ooh, is Carter on that one too, Hammond?
Yeah. Carter will be sitting at that table as well.
Oh, good. Yeah, she'd love doing that last time. So she's
it was cool to see her work last year and get to talk to her a little bit.
Yeah, she's sort of killing it right now. So I'm excited for her to be back. Well, awesome. Look at all of us doing cool things. Tom, you probably have cool things you're doing.
Yeah, in fact, this weekend is the last 3 days to get a chance to win a signed copy of my book, Pilot X, from Shelf Awareness. Shelf Awareness is a really cool newsletter. Twice a week, they send you reviews of the best books being published. So if you want to keep up on new books and possibly win a signed copy of Pilot X, just go to Google and search Shelf Awareness Pilot X. It'll probably take you to a link. I've been putting it on Twitter and Facebook as well. And you can enter there. It ends April 23rd, though. If you want a chance, get in there quick.
Yep, get in there while you can get it. Also, go get it. Yes. And before we go, real quick, I am doing an Overwatch tournament in the Frog Pants community. I'm very short on details at the moment because most of the work hasn't been done yet. But we're going to keep it nice and fun and light. Some nice prizes on the other end of it. It's called Overpants, and soon there'll be a place you can go on the web and see what's going on. If you ever were in the Heroes of the Pants tournament we did for Heroes of the Storm, it'll probably be similar to that, but all in Overwatch. So that's coming up soon. Keep your eye on the prize there. And then also, we have a band to announce for Nerdtacular 2017, and we will make that announcement on Monday. So if you're...
What?
Yeah, I know.
Is it Guns N' Roses?
No, it's not. November Rain is a terrible song, so we decided to turn them down when they asked if they could be the band. So no November Rain.
It's Dream Theater, isn't it?
Yeah, no Dream Theater. Oh my gosh, no.
They will be playing two songs.
Yeah.
Captain and Tennille it is. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, yep. Tennille, Captain, back together at last. Finally, Muskrat love must live on at Nerdtacular. Anyway, come back to my Twitter account, at Scott Johnson on Monday for that announcement. Nerdtacular.com will likely have it as well. Should have some stuff over there kind of redesigned and up and... As we get closer, we're like 2 months away, and it's kind of freaking me out. So we're starting to roll out the announcements. That's all good. What else? Oh, don't forget, you can always find us at Current Geek. That's a place to go. And Current Geek on that's Twitter. CurrentGeek.com on the web. CurrentGeek.reddit.com on Reddit. And I think that's it. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. We are happy to celebrate the 100th episode of this segment. Thank you to all listeners who send feedback or suggestions, and I look forward to seeing some of you at Nerdtacular. Now, on with the show. This week, we check in on an interesting lawsuit filed against Niantic, the makers of Pokemon Go, for virtual trespassing and other wrongs. Pokemon Go was the craze of summer 2016. And the software application has undergone some updates recently to keep it fresh. Niantic still brings in over $30 million monthly with this app, so the game remains highly popular as the weather warms up and brings people back outside for 2017. However, making big money and successful endeavors often brings threats in the form of legal action. This case is interesting because it looks legitimate, and the case may be on the cutting edge as virtual reality and enhanced reality games and devices go more mainstream. Residents of several states have joined claims in California federal court to sue Niantic for placing virtual items in the form of Pokemon, Pokestops, or gyms on their property, causing many people to trespass and damage those properties. The primary theory is that the placement of the virtual items is a type of new virtual trespass, but there's also an argument that the damage and intrusions are caused by negligence on the part of Niantic. As to the virtual trespass claim, Niantic has a fairly strong response in that trespass laws, while varied from state to state, typically do not protect from intrusions of intangible items like noise, vibrations, dust, or chemical clouds. Trespass is a fairly specific type of tort, and creating a new version of that would have potentially large, unintended consequences for other developers in the VR field and elsewhere. As interesting as the concept of virtual trespass may be, it is not established in law by the states or federal government, and it seems unlikely that the court will expand the law to cover the facts presented by the plaintiffs of this case. Turning to the negligence argument, that potentially has more legs. Even though Niantic warns players when they log in against going into unauthorized or dangerous areas, that would not necessarily protect them from liability, If the overall development of the app was deemed careless or thoughtless in such a manner that encourages activities that lead to things like unwanted trespass and property damage. Indeed, this is likely the very reason Niantic prevents players from operating the app at speeds of over 15 to 20 miles per hour, so as to avoid carelessly encouraging players to play and drive distracted. It will be interesting to see if this case proceeds beyond the initial summary judgment stage, and if so, whether Niantic will be the first to define the limits of what developers can do with VR and augmented reality type experiences. The bottom line is, even though Pokemon Go is a lot of fun for users, just ask my 8-year-old and 6-year-old, and even though many businesses love the extra foot traffic caused by getting people outside hunting Pokemon in their area, it's not a desire shared by everyone, especially private property owners. With virtual reality and similar technologies on the rise, law will need to adjust and adapt to fit the circumstances, in a similar way as trespass laws with respect to airspace and drone usage. Who knew Lapras, Charizard, and Dragonite would lead the charge to settling these issues in court? Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.